is Saturday, May 6th, 2017. This is Room in the Trees, a podcast about late-night nutrition and creativity and stuff. The following was recorded on April 27th, 2017. This is episode 40, Midnight Newton. Room in the Trees is hosted by me, Sabrina Harrison, and Trent Reynolds. Show notes, including pictures, links, video, and more for every episode can be found at roominthetrees.com. And if you like this podcast, please consider showing your support. You can become a subscribing patron at patreon.com/room. And please rate us on iTunes or leave us a review. It really helps us reach a wider audience and makes us feel encouraged to continue on this journey. T-shirts. It's official. T-shirts are cool. Let us know how you like them and take a picture of yourself with one of them and tag it on Instagram so we can see your beautiful selves. And now for today's episode.
I've had a weird tickle in my throat. I just keep having this very harsh sounding quick cough. It's like
you know, you are going to notice that I too have that very same thing, but it's been around our house for like literally 3 months. Like Liv had it for a while, then all the other girls got it, then I got it, then Laura got it, and it felt like it went away, but then it came back, and it's been this very I don't know, it's been hard to get rid of. And it's worse, I don't know if this is the case for you, but it's worse for us when you're laying down.
Exactly.
Like at night.
Yep.
That's when it starts kicking in, and all of a sudden it's just one cough. It's just like
yeah, I know. And it doesn't, like, my throat doesn't hurt or anything, right?
Yeah.
Do you guys have sore throats, or is it just?
At first it did come at the same time that other symptoms were happening, but it's kind of independent of that, though. It seems like it's got its own life. This little mono cough.
Mono cough.
My name is
Monokoff.
Monokoff.
Sounds like a Russian performer. Monokoff?
You might notice that today that my voice is a little froggy, and I'd like to tell you the reason why.
Okay.
I almost died.
Oh, no.
And I'm going to say it like that because I truly believed that I was almost, like, my number was up.
Are you serious?
Yes. And
Start from the beginning.
Well, I was hungry, so I went to Ralph's, which is on Barrington and Olympic, if you ever want to be creepy and stalk me there. I don't know, I'm giving the address. I was at Ralph's, and I like the brie baguette that they sell at Ralph's at the deli. Picked me up a brie baguette.
Is that just really like brie hungry. In a baguette?
Pretty much self-explanatory. There's not much more than brie and baguette in the sandwich. So couldn't help myself. I was hungry. I started eating the brie and baguette while I was driving. I took a bite and inhaled at the same time, and a little bit of baguette went down my windpipe. And that's happened before, but this time I was... like, you know how you cough and cough and cough and it finally you dislodge whatever?
Yeah.
Well, I coughed and coughed and coughed, and then I had no more air to cough with.
Oh, my God.
And it was the most alarming thing. So I'm driving down the road, like, making these horrible coughing, gagging, choking noises. Not too dissimilar from that. And I had to pull over. And I was looking around at who might be big and strong enough to do Heimlich on me, and there was nobody. I mean, there was like a homeless man who did not look very beefy, and I didn't know if he'd get the communication.
Yeah.
And a really thin woman who, again, I didn't know if she'd be able to save my life. So I literally thought I was done. And finally, one last little cough dislodged whatever baguette fragment was in there enough that I could get some air back in. And then I was able to cough, 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 cough. And I coughed for like, you know, 20 minutes. And then I've been coughing every day periodically in addition to the mono cough. has been this other cough and the froggy voice, because I just destroyed my throat.
Yeah.
You know, through the process. So it was like,
that's terrible.
It was seriously frightening, yeah. But also at the same time, I thought, I cannot die coughing on brie, ham and brie baguette. Like, that is almost more horrifying for that to be my legacy, for that to be what I'm known to have died from, than, you know, the actual event itself. Anyway, so it's kind of a weird thing where you're thinking about dying while you are dying.
That is honestly the most scary friggin' thing is in moments like that, when you, like, I've had that with kind of crossing the street or something, you're just in the, no, that's not a good example, but something where you feel like this could be happening right now. This is happening.
I want to imagine, like, whoever found me, like, eyes bugging out, like, with one hand on a ham and brie baguette.
God.
Just don't tell my wife and kids that it was a ham and brie baguette. Tell them I, like, got in a bad car accident. Like, that's a better story. I don't know. Anyway,
glad you're okay. When did that happen?
Just a couple days ago. My voice is still froggy from it. So, I'm glad to still be here with y'all. Glad to be on Room and Trees podcast. How was your week? Bet you didn't almost die from a ham and brie incident.
I've had a few moments, though, of, like, I'm really afraid of falling downstairs, and I've had a couple moments where I've tripped on something just slightly. Like, I just am one of those people that just should hold on to the railing and just should just go ahead and do that. Even if it looks stupid, just hold on to it. Because that's one of those slow motion, like, just catching yourself. But there's not a lot of room to spare. If you trip going downstairs, it's a really hard thing to catch yourself.
Yeah. And the chances of really doing damage are pretty good.
Yep.
Falling downstairs.
Yeah. So I've had a few moments walking the dogs where I'd be going downstairs, and if they pull just a little bit, like with me not paying attention, and maybe I'm looking at my phone, and they start pulling, and I'm like, there, see it all happen in front of my eyes. Totally. Yep.
Scary times, life.
Yeah.
How many stairs do you have in your...
It's just one flight of stairs, but there's a park at the end of the street that's a really long, long staircase. It's concrete down to the lake, and that's where I had the closest. I was going down. And I wasn't holding up the railing, and I was getting my phone into camera mode, and the dogs pulled, and I saw it all in front of my eyes. I got down. I thought that's, and then thinking, well, now Corey would be aware if I was missing. But before I met Corey, I don't know how long I could have been, you know, missing for. Oh my God, it's terrifying. This isn't going in the podcast, but there's something to be said for someone else having it, two people together in your life, because someone's got to be looking out for you.
Yeah, totally. Somebody got to be there.
Yeah. I got a tooth pulled.
Well,
yep.
You got a what?
A tooth pulled.
A tooth pulled. That's a big deal.
I got some. I need some more teeth in my mouth. Just got to be honest. I did not do the teeth care thing to form. So it's resulting in some issues now. So
you did not do.
I just didn't
not
really
brush your teeth. That's probably too
really,
personally.
I just really didn't focus on that. I mean, I brushed my teeth, but then I would, like, have a snack at night, and I wouldn't get up and then go brush my teeth. I would, you know, I'd eat my Fig Newton, and then I would just go to sleep.
I didn't know you love Fig Newton. Do you love Fig Newtons?
I love Fig Newtons. And
how have we never discovered this? This seems like like something we should have come upon before now. I love Fig Newtons.
I know. I didn't know. I mean,
did you? Yeah, you didn't know that.
I didn't know.
I can't believe that's never been mentioned.
It's become a serious thing in my house, where Corey has now ordered about 12 boxes on Amazon, have them shipped here. So we have.
I love that.
We bring four of them to bed, so that the night covered. getting up and having some. But this really good brand from Costco is, I'll put a link in the show notes, is whole grain, really good fig flavor, and then apple, cinnamon, and raspberry. Oh,
I'm so familiar. The raspberry is good, but it tends to be a little sticky on the coating. Have you noticed that? On the cookie part?
No. What's your favorite flavor? Do you know what I'm talking about which kind?
I believe so. Yeah. I don't know if there are multiple kinds at Trader Joe's, but
Is it Costco?
No. I'm sorry. Trader Joe's, yes. Costco, yeah. No. Is this like a original Fig Newton brand that they're just different flavors of?
I'm going to go get the package right now just to clarify so you can at least have a visual.
All right. We've got to get this straightened out.
Yeah. Okay. The brand is called Nature's Bakery.
Nature's Bakery.
Uh-huh. And they're cholesterol-free, dairy-free, zero trans fat, kosher, and non-GMO. And you can get them all in bulk at Costco, or you can order them online on Amazon.
we'll put that in the show notes.
Yeah.
So that is interesting. So you'll wake up in the middle of the night and just reach over for a little snack.
Yep, I will.
And do they have the resealable plastic on the top that you're able to open and close easily? Or
these are individually wrapped bars.
So you wake up and unwrap a Fig Newton.
Yeah, I do. And then wow. Corey calls me a little squirrel. He's like, little squirrel's having a little snack.
Will Corey wake up and enjoy one with you?
That's what I appreciate. He will. Instead of going, no, I'm cool. Stop snacking. He'll be like, yes, please.
It's like, hey, Corey, I'm going to wake up now. Get a Fig Newton, want one?
That's why he thinks of them ahead of time to bring them to bed. So,
man, that is just one accommodating human being right there.
it really is.
So there are so many reasons I think this Fig Newton situation is fantastic. We can end there. I could ask so many questions about.
Just ask a couple more.
Are there any equivalents for Corey? Are there things that he like comfort foods that he indulges in that you have learned to, or
yeah.
Kind of participate with him.
He is a fan of Fig Newtons, but he likes his chocolate for sure. And I can't really have chocolate because there's too much sugar in it for me. But
what kind of chocolate?
There's this very, very high top shelf in my kitchen, so all the snacks go up there, even the Fig Newtons. And then he reaches up and gets out enough for because if I have access to them during the day, I'll just eat them, Stricky, all day long. So
because it's probably something that most people kind of have a visual on, with the traditional Fig Newtons, they came in packs where you had two rows of
yes,
Newtons.
Yes, right.
Could you down a whole row in one sitting?
With a big glass of milk, probably, if sitting is long enough.
Newton and milk.
I haven't had that yet recently, but it sounds really good. Newton and like really cold milk.
Yeah, really cold milk and cookies is something else. I could take down a row of Newtons, no problem. One sitting, no milk. Dry. So we can't have Newtons, or I can't have them near me, like a package like that, or I will eat the whole pack in one day, no problem.
Yeah.
So what I have to do is when I get the craving for a Newton, I have to go to 7-Eleven and they have these little, this little two-pack.
Yes.
It's got two extended Newtons. They're double double wide. Double wide, two double wide Newtons. And that's how I get my fix.
So I think these will really work well for you because they're individually wrapped. So in them... there are two Newtons. That's the thing. So that's how I break it up. Like I can savor one and know there's another Newton in there. So it's not like right. you feel like you've got the extra one that you want after you finish the first one and then you're done.
Yeah. There is something to that, having two. You know, if you have just one candy bar in a package, you know, there's, you don't have that break to feel like, you know, I have, there's more where this came from. It's just like, you know, you power through the bar and it's nothing's left. I never thought of that. That's absolutely true. I do like the fact that there's another one waiting for me.
Exactly. And then you get mad when you like, you eat it not paying attention and then you're like, shoot, did I just eat the second one? Yes, I did. I didn't savor it. I just ate it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. So many questions about Newtons.
You could have a little snack set up in your studio where you guys keep your,
We do have treats. A snack set up already, yeah. I don't know if you knew this, but my mom, or if I had mentioned this before, but my mom had purchased a bunch of these really heavy-duty jars for, preserving food.
Mm-hmm.
And they've got a cool little latch on it that makes the jar airtight, which is perfect mm-hmm. for, studio where there is a certain amount of risk of bugs and pests and stuff. So she was getting rid of these jars, so I've got three of these big, heavy-duty, like, find-them-at-grandma-house-on-the-shelf jars.
Yeah.
I've put some pretzels in those, and Yumi's brought in a bunch of chips, and everybody throws, contributes to the water, bottled water source, and so. And, oh, I didn't tell you this. You know that banana truck that was in?
Yes.
That belongs to Barnana, which is a company that makes different banana treats. So they make like a coconut banana thing and a chocolate banana thing. And they're all these like kind of healthy snacks. They're super tasty. And they're just three doors down from us, Barnana.
Oh.
And they have a banana truck.
That's so awesome. That's so awesome. Have you met them yet?
And I think, yes, I met them and they're very cool. And they will like two or three times now have given us boxes full of their products. So I've eaten tons of Barnana and can definitely recommend them. So, I mean, the more we're in this studio space, the more I realize like there are so many cool, it just never ends. It just never ends. It's so many perfect little payoffs, little nuggets, lots of joy nuggets in the,
oh, wow.
In the studio space. So, so, what we doing?
Well, I wanted to read, do you know, Twyla Thorpe? She has a wonderful book called The Creative Habit, Learn and Use It for Life. And yes, I read it a few years ago. It was a really great, really great book about the process of it and where we get stuck. And I opened this today, in her book. I just wanted to read it. It's going to happen sometimes. Despite all the good habits you've developed, the preparation rituals, the organizational tools, the techniques for scratching out pre-ideas and actual ideas, there will come a time when your creativity fails you. You stare at the canvas, the screen, the keyboard, the empty room, and it refuses to meet your eyes. It looks away as if it's ashamed of you. You may as well be painting on shards of broken glass. Your screen shows nothing but wavy lines. Your fingers slip off the keyboard, never getting traction. The room turns dark and cold, and someone is locking the door behind you. You are in a rut.
Hmm.
She says, when I'm working, I'm always monitoring my momentum, always asking, is this piece moving forward or staying in place? Am I in a rut or a groove? Rut is when you're spinning your wheel, staying in place. The only progress you make is digging yourself a deeper rut. A groove is different. The wheels turn and you move forward effortlessly. It can mean all the difference in the world.
Hmm.
It says a rut is more like a false start. I really resonate with that.
Yeah, that's really interesting distinction between rut and groove.
I can read a little bit more. Or no.
Sure. Yeah, why don't you read a little bit more?
Okay.
Is there more about this rut and groove?
Yeah.
Okay.
A rut can be the consequence of a bad idea. You shouldn't have started a project in the first place. A rut can be the end product of bad timing. For some reason, you're out of sync with the world. You can have the brightest vision with the most mind-blowing idea, but if the world isn't ready for you, you can spin your wheels for years. Mm. A rut can form because of bad luck or circumstance conspiring against you. More often than not, I found a rut is a consequence of sticking to tried and tested methods that don't take into account how you or the world has changed. That's really good. I'm going to read that.
Mm-hmm.
More often than not, I've found a rut is a consequence of sticking to tried and tested methods that don't take into account how you or the world has changed. It's like your mother serving you the same breakfast you loved as a child. You push the meal away half-eaten and say, but you always loved Cocoa Puffs and pork sausage. That was then, this is now.
I was not ready for Cocoa Puffs and pork sausage in that sentence.
I wasn't either. I was like, wait, what? Oh, so you mentioned talking about why today.
Yeah. Yes.
Do we need to do a quack? Do we need to shake it out for a second?
Well, I'm just, now I'm thinking about the rut and groove thing. I think it's related to the why.
Uh-huh.
But one thing that I wanted to ask you before it passes through my mind is how long is a rut or a groove? Or in your experience, how long do these blocks or ruts or grooves last? Is there a cycle that you've seen or a pattern?
Just chewing for a second.
Chewing the Newton?
Chewing chicken.
Chewing chicken.
Just chewing some chicken.
The contrast of Cocoa Puffs and sausage, I think, is what kind of I find a little bit jarring. I cannot get hold both of those taste memories in my brain at the same time. Cocoa Puffs and sausage. Can you imagine that that mouthful? No. Oh dear.
Uh-huh. Yep, that's funny. Well, I think ruts can last a couple years sometimes, in some way.
Can they last decades?
That's making for a pretty sucky life.
It is. Well, that's what I wonder is maybe there are layers to this. It's not like, I think we often think of, I'm in a rut, like it's a single thing or single event or single, I don't know, like problem that we can get over or get out of. Like it's this, you know, again, speaking visually, like it's this, you know, this single rut, you know, this ditch or whatever that we can't get out of. But I often think that I've started, you know, the older I get, the more I see these patterns develop where I see that, no, this isn't one thing that I need to overcome and get out of. This is a pattern. You know, this comes up every once in a while.
Yeah.
And not only that, but there's layers to this pattern where I will get through one layer and realize that that layer has been around for, you know, two decades.
Can you give an example of that? What's something?
Well, I think this whole you know, issue that I've talked about in several episodes of finding my voice or being able to, finding my voice, like that concept or that idea or whatever, you know, that phrase is trying to express has evolved over time. And I feel like there have been moments where I've been able to break through that rut and recognize something about it or a dimension to it that represented baggage or a bad assumption that I'd been carrying with me for a very, very, very long time.
When did that turning point, could you name what that was or when that happened?
Oh, I wish in the various conversations with your dad, I think that's those have been helpful in that regard. I think there have been times when I don't know. I'm trying to think of a specific example because I know it's kind of hard to nail these things down when they're too high level, abstract.
Yeah.
And I can't. Nothing concrete is coming to my mind right now, so I'll have to continue thinking about that. Yeah. But I think my point is that my concept of what a blockage is, and we talked about flow last week, and and things, or like a writer's block or a painter's block or whatever, you get in the studio and you just don't feel like you can make it happen. It's not just one single kind of thing. It's the spectrum of things and spectrum of levels and layers and things that are really overarching and have to do with the narrative arc of your life. You know, and there are ruts that might stick with you for a very long time that you will finally break through and, the light will flood in and you'll realize how much in a rut you had been for so long. And then there are just like the little ruts where it's like, I just don't feel it today and I don't know why,
Yeah.
Anyway, I think this idea of...
Yeah.
Go ahead.
I was going to ask, when you have those in the studio... when you look back at sort of times when you were in a rut and then you got in your groove, was there something that helped shift that? Or
yeah, well, I think in that quote you just read, there are so many I think really good gems in there and things that we could make several shows out of just that quote. I think, but I think it often has to do with that we are trying to solve problems in the way we've always solved them.
Yeah.
When, what we really ought to be thinking is about the unique situation and the things that are available to us that maybe haven't been available to us before, ways that we can proceed that, that we're not even, that are just not part of our past experience. Obviously that's hard to do because, our decision making is informed by what we know and what we've experienced. But I think, that is often the case. And there are ways to get past that, to get past of your limited vision. And I'm thinking about yesterday, I was in the studio with Brian. He was laying down on the couch and he just said, like, I just feel like I've been in a funk lately. I can't get going. And we talked about it and he kind of told me what he was thinking, what he was after. And it kind of came down to the fact that he didn't have money to, or he was feeling financially stressed to go out and buy the materials he needed. But I realized, well, he usually does spray paint on glass. So the preciousness of the surface he's working on and the tediousness of his process creates this huge barrier to entry, to just get in to something,
yeah,
to start creating momentum,
really,
right?
Good thing to address. Yeah.
So I was just saying, I've got some house paint back in my garage that I saved for this very situation, when you just need to get jump started, you need to get momentum going, right? And so he had been talking about just wanted to be more loose and free with the paint. And I went home and got all these cans of different colors of house paint and bought them back. And we had a piece of drywall that wasn't used in the construction of the studio. And he put these tarps up that he had for a long time, just waiting for, the time that he was going to be able to kind of test this stuff out. And he started just throwing paint at this big piece of drywall. And he talked about wanting to be
That's
really physical.
So yeah.
Like he's a big guy and his work is usually so careful and considered. And he had been kind of splattering spray paint, realizing that he wanted to be bigger and more paint. and didn't know how to kind of approach it. Anyway, so we had this cheap house paint that nobody cares about, this big piece of drywall that was going to get thrown away anyway, and started dipping paper towels in the paint and throwing them at the drywall, and taking big nasty brushes and slamming them on the drywall. And it was just, and he started seeing potential and different kinds of marks and ways that he could achieve those marks. It was just, you know, so I think getting out of ruts for me is often has to do with, well, I think, you know, you even think of a rut, it's like you're walled in somehow, you're trapped. So finding the simplest, least amount of friction from getting you out of that trap, you know, just not jumping you out of the trap, just kind of wedging your way out. So is it a matter of just like picking up a pencil and breaking it, you know, or throwing a rock into the ocean, or, you know, or something like something small that you can do right now in this moment to edge your way out of that feeling rather than trying to find like the one solution, the one answer, you know?
That is right. That's the key. Not thinking you have to have the answer to solve it. You just have to take a step. You have to just step towards something.
Yeah. And I think this whole conversation, I think, ties into the question of why. I was listening to a podcast the other day. I can't remember what podcast now. I should go back and see what it was. But they were talking about motivation and why. You know, why do you do stuff? And ultimately that is how deeply we feel that why will affect how intensely we attack the things that we do. And so I think sometimes when we're in ruts or when we feel blocked or that we can't find flow, going back and redefining or reinvestigating why and solidifying that or reinforcing that can help us get out of the rut, you know, help us kind of build up more power to be able to push forward into something new, you know. Does that make sense?
I missed that last little bit about it. Can you say that one more time?
So when we have these ruts or blocks, sometimes going back and asking ourselves why we're even doing this,
mm-hmm.
right? And reinforcing that, strengthening that sense of why, or even just kind of trying to define it and think about it for a little while and make it clearer. So understanding that foundation or strengthening or defining that foundation can be a power, I think, to help us move forward and get past the block that that we're facing.
Right. What would be an example of the why for you?
The why that was expressed in this podcast, and again, I cannot remember what podcast it was, but the person said that they just have a very deep feeling of that every human life has value and every human life has potential. And the person was an educator, and I that really resonated with me, and something that really does motivate lots of my decisions about how I spend my time and even the art that I make comes from that because I believe that every human being is important and every life has value, no matter how insignificant to the standards of worldly success, that there's something there that deserves respect, deserves to see its potential fulfilled, and deserves some kind of investment from the human family, I guess. I don't know.
Mm-hmm.
So I think that's one of my whys. Why? Because I love people.
Mm. And you want to share it with them? Or?
Yeah. Well, and why do I go to the studio? I love seeing what Brian's up to. I love seeing what David and Yumi are up to. I love participating in that conversation, and I love it when they make strides forward and realize something new about themselves and feel a little bit happier about what they're doing and their life, you know. And I love it feeling like I get to contribute to that and build them up I feel fulfilled by that process.
Yeah. That is such a thing. It's just getting a little bit of feedback from another person, or just feeling, getting yourself out of being in your own headspace. It's huge. I think that's where people get in the most ruts. Also, I can imagine, you know, maybe he got, did you say his name's Dave?
Oh, we've got a David, yeah.
David? Is that who you're talking about?
I think I was talking about Brian. Brian okay. was, yeah.
Brian. Remember going back to the episode, I think it was The Biggest Nut, and I was talking about renting that gallery space for the week and trying to work and be loose, but the self-consciousness of thinking people were going to pass by and being wondering, what are you doing? What's the crazy person doing? And I would imagine that there would be an adjustment period to sharing a big space with other creative people and really getting deep diving into your work.
For sure. And I don't think it's for everyone. And it kind of, in some ways, directly goes against my nature as, as an introvert. And I do, like this morning, I was there by myself for probably 3 hours before anybody showed up, just because I get up earlier, you know, and everybody else is doesn't have kids and different schedules and whatnot. They tend to not show up until later in the day. And I very much value that time when it's just me alone in the space. And I think if there were other people there constantly, that I would have to come back to the garage and, you know, be here alone on occasion. Because I do value that and need that space and alone time too. So there's a balance. And I'm not saying this is, you know, everybody's why or everybody's solution, but... But yeah, so that's one of my whys. I don't think that's my entire why. But what do you feel like is, how would you describe your why?
I feel called to do the work I do somehow. Because I don't know if that's it. I feel, I don't know why, except the feeling that that's what I'm supposed to be doing in my life right now. I was going to say because I can't do anything else, but I can. And let me take this cop drop out.
I think that's totally legitimate. Both of those things. I think those are very powerful things, to feel like you are called by something, you know, to do. To fulfill a purpose, to contribute something, that's huge.
And I think what I'm trying to remember and learn, that you can be in a rut and still be doing the work that you're being called to do.
Right.
That's what I think is easy to get confused, because you just start thinking, you start second guessing yourself, and then you can go, why am I even doing this? And that you have to go bigger than that.
Exactly. I think that's the power of going back to the why, and my why was very literal, and I don't think that has to be the case always. And it can be just a general sense that, you know, you feel called to do this, I think. And to, you know, in those moments of despair or moments where you just feel like I cannot do this, to go back and remember and kind of try to relocate that feeling of, you know, that you are called, like, how powerful is that? And to realize that mission, I don't know, or that calling can be manifest, not just in this way, you know, by renting a studio space and, you know, doing paintings in there, but there are other ways to allow that energy or that thing to be manifest. And that would be, it could be a very powerful way to get around ruts, you know?
Yeah.
Because it allows you just to completely abandon that rut and realize that it might not be even close to the right way forward at all.
Right.
Instead of like continually trying to fix this one little rut, you know, you realize that there's so much more possibilities, because really what we're trying to do is this big thing. Anyway, I don't know. I can just see so many ways how that would give you perspective that would help you let go of your assumptions about what things have to be.
Yeah. Yeah. And to not, and to know yourself enough, and that rut isn't going to last forever, and that you can really mess stuff up by trying to work something when you're in a rut. Like, it's like what she says about the feeling of it sort of turning its back of you, or it's ashamed of you, or whatever. Like, it's one of those, like, just step away from the piece. You know, if it's not flowing, step away. Do not destroy what you've done. Do not destroy it all. You know, that's really a big part of it. Like, just take a walk. Just step away. That's why I like to work on multiple things at once, because there's nothing like being in a rut and staring at a piece that's not resolving itself.
Yeah. I think ruts often have to do with our desire to protect something, or our fear of failing, or fear of losing something. And having multiple things going on at the same time is one way to make every individual thing a little bit less precious, because it's not the only thing that we're doing.
Yeah.
Is there more that you wanted to talk about?
Mm-hmm.
Thank you for listening, and we will be back next week with episode 41. And like always, you can find links and info and show notes at roominthetrees.com, and t-shirts in the shop on there. And new dates are going to be released in the next week and a half for True Living Experience in Madison in the fall, as well as Santa Monica, California. So we are excited to launch that, and have a midnight snack and let us know what it is. Have a great week, and we'll talk to you next week.